I will leave all this, however, for another time and more fitting occasion. The Summerland is a world every way as actual as this. If you had clairvoyance enough to see into a person when very sick, and observe when the process of recuperation begins, and if you could also understand what is really meant by recuperation, then you would instantly obtain a philosophical conception of how the Summerland could be developed. I believe all educated physicians know, at least all spiritual physicians receive the incontrovertible doctrine, that what we term the six physical substances which make up the physical avatapoyas of the body, are exuded, so to express it, fabricated and emitted from the innermost of the nervous system, put out from within, and not laid on from without, that when a person is recuperating from disease, all day exercises and bodily wastings result in disease, or in broken down blood and tissue which sleep removes. There is always a thoughtlessness of the brain and also a perfect stillness in the voluntary organs. Only in such moments is the nervous system under the recuperating and upbuilding action of the innermost. In such moments of physical repose, the spirit, working through the life of the nerves, makes and multiplies the tissues, out of which the strong and heavy parts come. The tissues are built up out of the invisible life of the nervous system. But what makes the nervous system? These physical physicians can trace the nerves. But there is some hidden principle within the nerves, within the electricity and dynamic life of the nerves, within the mellow magnetism which covers the fine electricity, something within everything in you that is human and interior, a principle of recuperation known only by the power you feel, and by the occasional sense of immensity in your personal existence. This hidden principle lies sequestered in your least nerves, in your finest points of life and sensation. It gives you all your prodigious power of will. From it flow all your moral feelings. It throbs through all parts of your being, it cleaves through its magnetic and electrical vestures, acts on the nerves, outbreathes and condenses the tissues, and ultimately and successively elaborates all the physical organs which make up the corporeal system. Now, the principle of growth is identical with the unfoldment of the Summerland. I do not wish to detain you upon this point, but merely desire to fix your thoughts on the terrestrial dynamics of the planets. Terrestrial magnetisms, terrestrial electricities, and whatever else men call imponderables, constitute the nervous system of this physical universe. The universal nervous system holds the same relation to matter as the nervous system of the spirit to the physical parts of the body. Every physician knows that the first beginning of a human being is a point of nerve wrapped up in matter. This point of nerve is the starting point of life. Next come the tissues, the fine thickness on the outside, then the blood begins to flow, and so on, more and more concrete, until the full equipped outer body itself is formed and ready for parturition. The spiritual world is made from life points sent out from the chemical coalitions of the planets. Then the Summerland becomes a literal truth in harmony with the nervo-astronomy of the universal system. It may seem to your imaginations that this spiritual world is afar off, that it must be a vast and remote existence, because astronomers have not peered into it. But it is my belief that astronomers, with their physical instruments, will, one of these fortunate future days, recognize the Summerland, and I believe, furthermore, that astronomers will see landscapes and physical scenes the more clearly than those vague images which are now revealed through telescopes, as existing upon the moon and different rolling stars. No, the spirit world is not remote. We move every moment in its presence. This earthly planet itself rolls in its orbit under the observation of the inhabitants of the spirit land. The vast includes the little. The Summerland is the comprehensive sphere. Astronomically speaking, the Earth is on one side of that vast galaxy of suns and planets termed the Milky Way, and directly across this great physical belt of stars, we find the sublime repose of the Summerland, and this but the receptacle of the immortal inhabitants who ascend from the different planets that belong to our solar system. These planets all have celestial rivers which lead from them toward the heavenly shores. And each organ in the human body holds its physical relation to the brain by means of nerves and blood rivers, so these different planets in the physical universe hold a currental, magnetic, and electrical relation to the Summerland, which corresponds to the brain. How is it that strength rises to the brain of a man from what he eats? It is by means of circulation. And this circulation is regulated by the law of attraction and repulsion. How do spirits travel from these physical globes to their homes in the Summerland, and reversely, from the Summerland to persons and places on the planets? Answer: by circulation. And here, too, magnetic river circulation is regulated by attraction and repulsion. Thus the analogy may be extended ad infinitum. I did not particularly notice until 1853, that different seasons of the year, and different positions of our planet in its orbit around the sun, yield a different clairvoyant vision of the Summerland. I found that an observation made in midwinter afforded a very different aspect of the spirit world from that which would be obtained in May, July, or November, and furthermore, in the same year, I first noticed that the condition of the observed made a difference in what was visible. Therefore it became necessary to adopt methods and conditions which would enable the clairvoyant to mark the particular sections of the Summerland that came within the range of vision in accordance with the different months of the year. From that time to this, I have been regulated by the discovery that the rolling of this terrestrial planet, in its orbit around the sun, affects the sweep of the clairvoyant sight in many instances, furnishing unexpectedly a new conception of a familiar scene, and bringing to light other territories in the heavens before unknown. The spirit land has a firmament. It is circular, and its vast firmament is filled with stars, suns, and satellites. It rolls in the blue immensity. The sky there is not without its clouds. They change very much like the clouds of our tropics, yet they do not much resemble them. The changes are like those in southern skies, but the clouds themselves are very different. Among my first observations in the direction of the spirit land, I discerned a river which seemed to flow across the open aerial space and pour into the far distant bosom of that heavenly world. It was a river made of various streams that flowed out from planets, which blended and widened and expanded into a great sea, and thus became the flowing element of perfect beauty in the land of spirits. That celestial river is as visible to the clairvoyant perception as the Hudson, the East River, or any other water that can be seen by the natural eye on the globe. It flows away far beyond any distance that I have power to trace. It seemed like a celestial Gulf Stream, but whither it goeth I know not. I only know that it is one of the sources of unutterable melody. It seems to give out music from all its variegated margins, and to yield lessons also, because on several occasions, vast congregations were visible on the shores, learning something beautiful concerning its harmonious sounds. What they learned I cannot tell. I only saw that after listening and conversing and reposing for an hour, or what seemed to me to be that length of time, they rose all at once. They seemed to be many thousands, a vast assemblage, and then also arose their songs, and those songs, blending with the music of that wonderful water, seemed to me to fill the whole universe with melody. So full of joy was my heart that I lost all spiritual power either to see or hear. And so suddenly did I return to the common state that I could not but ask the person who just then entered the room, whether he had heard that music. "No," he replied. "Indeed," said I. "Didn't you hear anything?" "No." So real and so distinct was the sound I could scarcely believe my friend's denial. In 1854 I had an opportunity, for the first time, to contemplate a celestial garden. It was unlike anything I had ever seen in this world. The Garden of the Hesperides, of which we dream, only vulgarly represents the beautiful fact. When I saw the immense landscape and the innumerable beauties that come up from the soil, and the labyrinth of leafage which gathered upon the vision to the right of the scene, I could not but ask, "Will someone tell me the extent?" After a few moments a cerebrotelegraphic dispatch came into the mind, whispering distinctly it would reach from here to Scotland, near 4,000 miles in length, 500 miles in width. It seemed to be a far-extending avenue of flowers and beautiful trees, and there seemed no limit to the number of persons that were walking leisurely, lovingly, arm in arm, and oh! The thousands of beautiful children that were at play through the devious labyrinths of that vast heavenly park. Now let us reason for a moment. Christian believe, or profess to believe, that, in our Father's house are many mansions. This faith is based in reality, or else it is false, and there is, or there is not a mansion or a house eternal in the heavens. Is that scriptural language figurative, or is it literal? Does it mean anything? You, who so strenuously believe the Bible, say that I am an infidel. But I now ask you, who is the infidel? Your Christian poetry says, there in a land of pure delight, where saints immortal reign, eternal day excludes the night, and pleasures banish pain. Now I ask every professed Christian, do you stand prepared to repudiate the fact affirmed in your poetry? Who is infidel tonight? Your highest authority in the church and in the Bible said, in my Father's house are many mansions. He said also that that house was built without hands. Do you believe it? Do you believe anything on the subject? If you do, then you have at least the rudiments of an education which you ought to have perfected by this time into some reasonable comprehension of what the Father has, without hands, spanned out for you beneath the unfolded heavens. But to return. In the trees of that vast celestial park I heard the songs of birds, such as I had not heard from any species of birds in this world. In 1855 the songs of these birds first caught the clairaudient ear. This power of hearing, superadded to the telescopic, gave all the more perfection and actualness to the observation. These birds resemble, to some extent, the birds of this planet under the equator. In plumage, however, they were unlike. I saw celestial birds that excluded all rays except the yellow. They were singularly, wonderfully yellow, quite different from the buzz of the canary. It seemed as though composed of yellow crystalline air. I could see the nervous systems of these birds, their whole physical interior, they were so transparent. They were, I observed, swift in their flight. I also saw a bird which excludes all rays save that of blue, and that looked like a diamond cut out of pure, ethereal immensity. I never could have imagined anything so marvelously expressive of pure, immense, heavenly love. This particular bird was a representative, I saw, of universal private affection. The yellow bird was also a representative. It had a great meaning, the mellower affection which comes from wisdom. The songs of these birds echoed from the Consilium, a place where minds who had gathered from the past, occasionally meet as in a brotherhood for deliberations. I inquired concerning the flowers, of which there were innumerable varieties, different from any that I had seen on earth, except one, which somewhat resembled the violet. All others were new and wonderful. There were also carious vines that grew all over very lofty trees, instead of leaves, the vines gave out countless throbbing flowers. Each corolla I pulsated like a harp, and when I looked more intimately and carefully, I saw that every flower seemed to be conscious that it was part of a divine life and plan. Along the river, of which I first spoke, I saw what appeared to be grasses, but they were not such as I have seen on earth, and yet they were emanations from the heavenly soil. They were what might be termed mossy grasses, but the fibers were silken, and reflected the rainbow colors of the diamond. The exquisitely fine fibers, composing the mossy grasses along the margin of the aerial Gulf Stream, gave off a purple brilliancy which was mellowed softly down, until it seemed to lose itself in a sort of atmospheric immensity of its own. As I gazed, it seemed to blend and lose itself within innumerable seas of color. I have tried to get some repetition of the effect of that color by visiting our galleries of painting, but I have seen nothing like it on canvas in the pictures of any earthly artist. Church's heart of the Andes, the deep, rich, immense colors of the Cordilleras, and the infinite repose expressed in the marvelous depths of that picture, seem to be the merest physicalism compared with that which, in 1855, was first reflected upon the cerebro-telescopic eye. And then, to make sure, twice in that year it was sought and seen again, and also several times since, and in every instance it only became more perfect, different only in additions, no disappearing, no transformations, no shifting scenes. Sometimes I have visited the scenic transformations, as exhibited in the New York theaters. I once went to Laura Keene's, to see if I could, by witnessing the representation of fairylands, etc., get something like a hint of that better country. The display was unsatisfactory, though brilliant and successful. In those dramatic representations of spirits, and in attempted supernatural exhibitions on the stage, I have never seen anything at all to be compared with what is positive reality in the other world. The dissolving views, which are exhibited on the stage as best illustrations of the spiritual, I have never seen in the spirit land. The magical opening and closing of flowers, for example, and spirits coming out of unfolding plants, and the elves and little sprites which are dramatically represented, as in the myths and superstitions of Ireland and of the ancient Britons, are nothing like the permanent representations of the spirit world. Flowers never magically open there, and plants do not give off little human beings. I never saw trees changing their location or leafage, never saw anything that looked like transmutation or enchantment, but instead, solid, sturdy life and progressive growth in the house not made with hands. There is an island, which I first saw distinctly in 1857. I was in Buffalo at the time. I found by conversing with a brother who had gone there, James Victor Wilson, that they called it the Island of Agrippina Maid. It takes its name from the purposes to which it is devoted. It is situated in a very vast body of what would be called water in the earthland. There is a spring on that island which they call Porolium, and there is a beautiful cluster of springs some distance to the west which they name the Porola, and every one of these springs gives off exceedingly sweet musical sounds, which are full of unutterable significance. Those harmonious notes blend with the streamlets which lose themselves in a beautiful river that flows along by the flowery paths of the Hospitalia. This name is given to one of the temples where persons who had become attached to some particular thing in this world, so that it had become an infatuation with them, are taken to be cured. It is one of the many attractive sanitary temples of reform on that beautiful island. The infatuation of a person is named Tolka. When a person from Earth has an infatuation so strong as to preclude his taking interest in anything else, he is invited to these springs and to the temples. The teacher physicians who are appointed on that island are called Apuzia. I never heard or saw such words before, and do not know whether they correspond with any earthly language. I obtained the orthography of the words from Brother Wilson, who pronounced them over and over again in my listening ear. See end of this volume, there are many spirit physicians on the Isle of Agrippina Maid. In a very different portion of the spirit land, seen in the year 1856, I saw an island called Roselia, which is a region of great splendor in the midst of islands of less attractiveness. On that island dwelt persons who had never lived upon the planet Earth. It was said that there were on that attractive spot persons who were from the just maturing planets of Mercury and Venus. The description of that island, which I cannot now give in detail, would interest you, since it was so different from everything else that was then visible. One of the attractive islands near Roselia is called Betelos, because some educated Greeks sought its retirements, soon after their arrival in the spirit land, as a suitable place to celebrate the advent on Earth of Plato's doctrine of the deity, including his theory of ideas. Polski is an island, seen for the first time in 1857, situated in another part of the spirit land. It is frequently visited by former inhabitants of this earth, especially those who are still searching for ancient wisdom, and who believe not at all in the theories and education of the moderns. They think that God's truth must be learned from those who lived in the remote past. To such, that island is a favorite haunt, not the haunt of poets, but of those who still seek for wisdom through ancient views and old opinions. There is another island called Alam, intimately related to the one just mentioned, where certain ancients went to form themselves into a brotherhood, composed of persons who were born long prior to the origin of the Old Testament. Lonelia is the name of an island, seen for the first time by me in 1859, which is inhabited by young persons from the earth who died as orphans. On this heavenly spot they are introduced to those who are their parents in spirit, but of whom they were not always physiologically born on earth. In this behold a mystery. In the spirit land countless families are visible. It seems that certain spirits are even more gregarious than our people in this world. Many have strong attachments of consanguinity at first, and then, forgetting or losing such earthly attachments, they seem to dwell, like old persons, in memories, and particularly enjoy revelations from and conversations with those who have lived in the spirit land for many centuries. If you should get a communication from any one of these spirits, telling you that he lived in a particular house, in a certain street, you might be considerably misled, because, although they live in the spirit world, and in plain sight of this earth, yet they believe in memory only, and do not take interest in present actual things and circumstances. The Royal Circle of the Foley is a brotherhood very much resembling our American Shakers. On one occasion it was observed that the members of this brotherhood corresponded in spirit and faith with the Shaker communities, and that these were really baptized thus with the presence of what men call the Holy Ghost, making them feel more deeply assured that they were right in religious and communal matters. From this circumstance you see that people after death do not become instantly endowed with wisdom and freedom. The spirit world, in short, is just like this world, on a higher plane. There is a temple called the Consilium, which, I believe, means the temple of affectionate thought and practical wisdom. In this Consilium are frequently and mostly heard the voices of women. They believe and teach principles different from those peculiar Greeks who gathered upon the distant islands. In this temple very cultured spirits assemble for the purpose of acquiring information concerning what is best to accomplish upon the planet Earth, or upon Mars, or Jupiter, or Saturn, for all these planetary populations need to be frequently visited, and there, in that beautiful temple are gathered the wisdom, intuition, affection, hopes, love, poetry, and music, of multitudes of the sweetest, happiest, truest, most earnest and philanthropic women that have lived on the planet Earth. These women, with their companions, gather there occasionally for information and deliberation. There is a class of persons in the spirit world who are great travelers. They are almost like our gypsies. They form themselves into affinitive groups, and, harmonizing with the circulating rivers between the different planets, go on protracted journeys through innumerable scenes, and do not return to their pavilions for many years. Katie, my former companion, came to me, as reported in the Penetralia, and said that she was then to start upon a journey, she knew not whither, nor when she would return, and she immediately began the journey, and has not yet returned, or I should have heard from her. She had joined the group of excursionists, without knowing whither they were going. Mothers have inquired to know concerning their little ones, whether children born before perfect maturity become persons in the Summerland. It is found that infants born from 6 to 8 weeks before nature's time, continue on in the spirit world, slowly and surely acquiring the personal growth they would have attained had they lived in the body the full number of years. Mothers, therefore, who go to the spirit world to meet their little darlings, must be somewhat intuitive to know and recognize the child that was spirit born without a moment's earthly life. Again, there are women who have had many children, who have, nevertheless, never been mothers. I was amazed when first I learned this, and I looked into the subject day after day, and persistently inquired with the greatest particularity, in order to ascertain the exact truth. In 1858 I found, to my astonishment, that there were on earth certain women and men with families who have never yet known maternity or paternity. I found that real mothers conceive with the whole life and love of their heart, and that real fathers produce from the vitalic energies and magnetisms of the whole brain, and that no blood and passion relations amount to anything to the progenitors beyond the tomb. So, as a consequence, it is seen that all the offspring of your legalized debaucheries, your blood and passion, are likely to be strangers to you, and the red children of others. And the legalized marriage, unless it coronate the spiritual fact, melts, like all temporary error, at the door of the tomb. Your offspring, unless they be even from your spirit, and therefore from God, are only physiological productions, so far as you are concerned, for they find their true parents in other homes in the eternal heavens. Thus those who were unmarried in this world, after death meet both their true mates and their spirit families. I wish to speak a few moments more with reference to social life in the Summerland. I found, on inquiry, that certain kinds of idiots die like blossoms on trees that produce no fruit, children who are hybrids in their phrenological organizations, having not even the germs of a mind, but only the sanguine propulsions of the blood which give them the instinct of the animal, causing them to open their mouths to eat, and to drivel in sign of a desire for drink, such are but the vestiges of a worn-out, miserable, passionate, but legalized marriage. These useless offspring come from those who are permitted to be debauched by the rumholes, cesspools of intemperance on earth, with no law or civil regulation positively to prevent evil. Much of this agony of childbearing results in nothing, only so much organized clay that must go through the chemical hopper again, and be wrought up in the combination of the physical world. Such is the fate of certain kinds of idiots who come from passion and intemperance. But in the spirit land I have seen hosts and groups of beautiful children that were gathered to learn lessons from birds, and trees, and rivulets, and flowing streams. These happy children were each gathered according to a name which represented the group, and over each assemblage was appointed an apousia. That is just what, in a very crude way, we shall endeavor to represent in our newly organized children's lyceums. If possible, we will have a little of the kingdom of heaven on earth. Let us try in our lyceum to make some human progress like that which is rolling in beautiful groups beyond the stars. In the spirit world I noticed a vast congregation of persons who were in this world known for their philanthropy. Age is not represented in the physical aspect of a person in the other life, but wholly by the expression of the eye and the temper of the mind. Age, as we call it, is not seen or known there. Those philanthropic persons receive delegates from the battlefields of America. For ages those celestial Samaritans have gathered the soldiers as they came, in large parties at a time, direct from the cannon's mouth or the bayonet's point. The newcomers are slowly introduced to a new and a different life, and this is done with such gentleness, with such beautiful and graceful methods. But those of both sexes who are gathered in these philanthropic labors, wear clothes of various appearance and of wondrous fashions, different from anything you would or could imagine. I have never yet seen any silken gauze or gossamer fabrics to compare with the garments they used. Many wear a peculiar flowing dress, which, in a moment, can be either wound about the person in graceful folds or taken off. This garment, for either man or woman, is appropriate and beautiful beyond all imitation. And then the feasting which is sometimes visible in the Summerland, would give you a great joy to behold. I verily believe that never a man or woman would partake of what is called the Lord's Supper, never partake of the crude elderberry wine and the very carefully prepared unleavened bread, if they could see the feasting of hundreds of thousands at the Lord's Supper spread out on those islands, and along the fringed margins of those beautiful and musical rivers. I never before so well knew what was meant when your authority and our brother, the great spiritual reformer, said, "Consider the lilies of the field, how they grow, they toil not, neither do they spin, and yet I say unto you, that even Solomon, in all his glory, was not arrayed like one of these." The beautiful truth contained in that passage was exemplified to my mind in my first vision of the scene of a great feast in the spirit land. Verily, no man, or woman, or child, in the higher life, careth for the immediate source, that is, they do not give themselves thought and great care for the food they receive and enjoy at appropriate seasons.